Hello and welcome to another Trev and Ben podcast. Hello, Ben.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm... It's unusual. Yeah, I'm okay. Thanks. How are you?
I went into song there, didn't I?
You did. Are you that pleased to hear from me?
I don't know. I don't know why I went into song. I don't know. I've been singing quite a bit this week. I've been sort of doing quite a lot of stuff about the house, and I've been singing quite a bit. I think I've got a kind of I'm in a bit of a musical mode.
Yes, the lockdown insanity has now reached singing levels.
The thing is, I only know little bits of songs, so I find myself singing just a few lines over and over again. And I love a bit of like the old crooner stuff. So I was walking around the house the other day going, "Moon River, wider than a mile, I'm crossing you in style someday." And that is about all I know of that song.
So well,
I just keep singing that little bit over and over again.
Yeah, that you know more of Moon River than I know. In fact, there's an episode of Frasier where he has to sing the outro for an award ceremony called the CBs,
right.
And it's to the tune of Moon River,
right.
And I know that song better than I know the actual words.
And the other one I've been singing a lot is, you know, the Bobby Darin song. It was sung by a lot of people, but Beyond the Sea.
Oh, I might know it. I don't know about the title.
Somewhere beyond the sea, somewhere waiting for me. And I know that's about all I know of that as well.
It rings a very distant bell.
There's a line that goes, "My lover stands on golden sands." That comes around a lot in my singing.
Okay.
I don't sing any modern stuff. There's no modern music I really sing. I like to get into a bit of Queen every now and again.
Okay.
A bit of Bohemian Rhapsody. I'd love to have a go at that when I'm singing.
You're not doing any Stormzy stuff or Eminem's Rap God or
not
things like
really.
That?
No? I'm going to sound such a musical philistine, but they all sound the same to me. I've sort of reached that age where that sort of young people's music sounds all the same to me. It's like, I'm not one of these people that decries it. You know, like, when I was growing up and when rap was sort of on the scene, sort of my grandparents and parents go, "Oh, that's rap. It's just terrible. It's not music." And I'm not at that stage. I kind of see that there must be some artistic merit to it, but I don't see it.
And it's
not talking to me.
That's fine. It has its place. It's just not for you. That's
fine. Not for me. No. And chart music isn't meant for people of my age. Chart music is aimed at 15 to 34 year olds. So I've been long out of that age bracket and that demographic.
Nice to know I've still got about a year of that left then in that demographic.
Yeah, so you can still hum along to, like, I mean I'm involved with Top of the Pops, right, the program, the radio program, but every week I have to do some work on it. I don't know who the people I shouldn't really be admitting this, but I don't know who the fuck I've got to talk about. I have to do all this research, and I sound like I know what I'm talking about when I'm on it. I ain't got a clue who these people are.
Yeah, let's hope they don't listen to this.
It's unlikely they're going to listen to this.
Oh, I did have a nice message from Andy Drury the other day, speaking of which, and he sent me a lovely message saying, "Oh, by the way, people are listening to your podcast." I think he'd heard us joking a couple of times about our two listeners. So he sent me a very nice message just saying, "Oh, we are listening."
Oh, thank you, Andy. That's very kind.
Very nice. Thank you.
Talking of messages, actually, there's a message that I've been meaning to talk about for a couple of weeks and I keep forgetting. So I've got it in front of me right now. So there's a message from our old mate John, and this was when we were talking way back about TV shows for kids and TV shows that freaked you out.
Oh yeah.
Okay. So because I was talking about Cities of Gold, and John thought he was the only person who remembered Cities of Gold, so he's glad that there's somebody else who remembers that. But he said there was a random TV show that he remembers from a kid that freaked him out.
Okay.
And I've tried to look up and find out what this TV show is, and I can't find what it is. He says, "All I can remember was a child climbing out of a sort of wide pipe coming vertically out of the ground, about 2 feet high. The whole top was a lid, and two other kids were helping them out." He said, "I don't know why I found it so weird, but it was."
What does that mean, the whole top is a lid?
I suppose it's like the pipe has got a lid on. I'm in my head, I've got like a pedal bin style lid open at the top of the pipe. I don't know if that's right or not, but I've done some searching to find out what this can be, and I don't know. I don't remember it myself. So if that rings a bell with anyone.
I'm not complaining, but you've given quite a vague description of...
Well, don't ever come at me. I'm only reading you what John said. I mean, it's all he can remember.
Okay. Well, if anyone can piece that riddle together, get in touch.
I mean, I was trying to think what would have, like... the only thing that came to mind was Stick of the Dump, but he lived in a dump, not in a pipe. So I don't think it was that.
Super Mario, he comes out of pipes.
Well, that's what I thought, but I don't think Super Mario... did they have a TV show?
And to be fair, I've never seen Super Mario need assistance getting out of a pipe.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, look, if that rings a bell with anyone, we'd love to solve that little riddle, see how we get on. So anyway, where were we? What were we talking about then? Singing. Yeah.
Yes, for some reason you've lost your mind and you're singing.
Yeah, yeah. So not for singing. So, oh, by the way, hello, Ben.
Hi.
How's your week been?
Well, I've had some rather big developments this week.
Have you?
I have.
It's exciting.
Yeah, I guess I might as well just tell you. I am now vaccinated against the coronavirus.
Oh, that is massive news. Let me tell you something.
Go on.
I'm having mine next Monday.
Very good.
Wow, isn't it exciting?
Now, are you joining me? Are you going to be coming to Team AstraZeneca?
I think that's what I'm having. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. It's so childish.
I just want to find out how you've had it before me when you're 11 years younger than I am, and they've said that they're not prioritising jobs and that sort of stuff. Have you wheedled your little way in to have yours before me? How's this happened?
I just got a text saying, "Dear Mr. Harmer, would you like to come and get yourself vaccinated?" Yeah. Go onto the website. I thought, click, click, booked.
Do you know what this smacks of? This smacks of favouritism, nepotism. Ever since you wrote to your MP, Mims Davies, or whatever her name was, in the lockdown process, and I don't know whether you've suddenly got yourself in the club with her because you and your landed gentry type.
I don't know. I think, well, you know, I think Mims, old Mimsy, she obviously recognised I'm a very important constituent.
Right, yeah.
And she's, you know, I'm a concerned citizen and she wants to keep me safe.
Well, I mean, I'm delighted you've had it, but a little bit annoyed you've had it before me.
Well, if it calms you down a bit, I did have a very brief period of teenage epilepsy, which may have, you know, ticked a box to boost me up the list. I like to think it's just because I'm, you know, landed gentry these days, swanning around East Grinstead, and I get priority treatment. And I'm better than the scum like you.
I suppose a lot of people in East Grinstead are old, so perhaps they just assume that you're in your 70s. So you're in God's waiting room.
They could put that on the sign. East Grinstead, God's waiting room.
did you have any side effects?
I did.
Did you? My dad had his, and he was unwell for about a week, really. He had about 3 days of severe flu symptoms, and then he was just knackered for about a week.
No, I must say, I haven't had it too bad. I got it on the Saturday evening, and on the Sunday morning, I felt like I didn't really want to get out of bed. I felt quite shivery, and I spent most of the day Sunday probably, you know, wrapped up in more layers than I needed to be, feeling a little bit sorry for myself and a bit spaced out, a bit sort of mentally... woof, checked out, kind of. Then I had a couple of paracetamol, and then I'm fine again now, other than the lingering arm pain.
So it's just like a little bruised feeling?
Yeah, to put anyone who's slightly needle phobic or anything, or, you know, not looking forward to that aspect of it, I want to put you at ease. It didn't hurt at all.
Did you not just feel a tiny prick?
Hey! No, I didn't even believe she'd done it. I thought, no, you can't have done it. Because I didn't feel a scratch. I didn't feel anything at all. All it felt like was as if someone put their thumb up against your arm and applied slight pressure.
Okay.
It couldn't have hurt less. However, the next day, it feels like someone has punched me in the arm with extreme force, and I've got a very bruised feeling, but not looking, arm.
Yeah, well, that's all right. I mean, it's only, a couple of days discomfort for getting some freedom back. It's a small price to pay, isn't it, really?
Yeah. So anyone who's...
First of two jabs, right? You got, what is it, 9 to 12 weeks till you get your next one?
Something like that. Yeah. So, anyone who's, you know, potentially scared or worried about it, I can assure you it doesn't take 2 minutes to administer it. It's basically painless. And the side effects for the majority of people will be low, limited, if you get them at all.
Yeah, I mean, so my dad had some, my mum had none, my brother's had his, he had none. I mean, I hate injections, as you know. I fear them. And even when I got the text, there was a little bit of dread in me, but I just think I've got to get this thing done. I can't wait to have it done to just get back to sort of a bit more of a normal life. I know you've got to have the two jabs really before we get fully back, but yeah. And I think, you know, everyone's should be left to their own choice, but I think if you choose not to have it, there should be sort of vaccinating snipers that they stalk you. And when you're least suspecting it, you know, like when they sort of try and tranquilize a rhino or something.
Yeah.
There'll just be a dart fired at you and you'll be vaccinated anyway. I think it's the sort of, you know, if you choose not to have it, that's fine. But there is always a chance you might be got by the sniper. You're not necessarily going to be got by the sniper, but it'd be like a random thing. Anyone who's not been vaccinated, there's always a chance. And that's the sort of payoff of decided to not have it.
I like the idea of the sort of vaccine sniper, but I think it should be more of a sport than that. I think it should be I think it should be Boris Johnson's responsibility. Him and, say, Matt Hancock, they can dress up and in camouflage and hide in bushes and jump out at you with a blowgun and hit you with the vaccination darts. That'd be great.
Well, I think, you know, because he comes from that sort of class that go hunting, he'd probably be quite a good shot. Well, I mean,
if
you want to be in hospital, you want Prince Philip out doing it.
And those people basically have been wanting to hunt the plebs for years. They've had to settle for foxes, but given the first chance, they'd hunt us like anything.
That's what they should have like a little horn that they blow, and they go out on horses and follow those who've chosen not to be vaccinated. It's like a new sport for the upper classes. Well done for having it, and I'm sort of glad to have got my mind booked in.
And if you're worried about, because I know you're a bit needle phobic, just simply look the other direction.
I will anyway.
I promise you won't even see the needle or even know she's done it.
Good.
Or he. It happened to be a she with me.
Yeah, and this is International Women's Day, mate.
I know, I've just been accidentally sexist,
you
haven't
have
I?
Been talking of accidental sexism, did you see Burger King?
No, what have they done now?
So today, the day that we're recording this is Monday, the 8th of March. It's International Women's Day. And, I mean, you know when people just, like, they decide to do a PR thing and nobody really has thought it through. So they put out a tweet from Burger King that said, "Women belong in the kitchen."
What?
Yeah.
It must have been a joke.
But they then followed that up, presumably because of the backlash. They followed it up with, like, "If they want to, of course." And then it said, "Yeah, only 20% of chefs are women. We're on a mission to change the gender ratio in the restaurant industry by empowering female employees with the opportunity to pursue a culinary career." I just think that's like, when they sat down at that meeting, and you know what PR people are like? I used to have to work with a lot of PR people, and they're all fucking mental and up their own arse. And you can imagine the meeting and go, "I got this great idea. We really push for female cooks on International Women's Day. I think it's a great opportunity to really push our brand out there, real brand awareness, to show that we're on message and we're really embracing all genders. Oh, it's a great idea. Yeah. So how do you think we can sell that? I've got a great idea." Put out a tweet, just says, "Women belong in the kitchen." "Oh, great, brilliant idea. Who's going to sign that off?" "Yeah, I'll sign that off." Fucking idiots.
But the thing is, you and I can see, we've been in those meetings. We know how painful they are. And I guarantee you, there was at least three people in that meeting who knew it was shit, who could see the problem a mile off.
But had a train to catch.
But were keeping their mouths shut to make the meeting end quicker.
Or they just weren't listening. Like, the pitch was going on and on. The PR person had fucking charts and graphs and all kinds. And they're sitting there going, "Oh, what the fuck is this?" And then the PR person going, "Right, so we're all in? Everyone agreed?" And they go, "Yeah." Tweet's gone out today. The MD or whatever sitting there going, oh, fuck it. Why didn't I listen?
To be fair, as a PR move, it's worked.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. As a PR disaster, it's a fucking whopper. Now, the big news, I suppose, this week, Ben, is tonight, on the Monday we're recording this, tonight on ITV, it's the big interview.
It is, when Meghan and Harry meet Oprah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Are you going to watch it?
No, it's on too late. It's on at 9 p.m. and it goes on for 2 hours and I haven't got time for that.
Right.
I might catch it up tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just going to ignore it. I can't be bothered with it. I've been going through all of this in my mind about whether to watch it or not, because it's quite a big deal. It's sort of a bit of history, isn't it? It's a bit like when Diana did a Panorama interview, when Prince Andrew did his Newsnight interview, which was a great success.
Oh yeah,
I've got this thing where I don't sweat. there's a thing about watching it, but on the other hand, I just think 2 hours of this, I don't know how it's going to be. Do you know what I mean? And I'm not anti-royal. I'm not totally royal. I'm quite ambivalent about the royal thing, but I quite like the historical moments that having the royal family brings, if you know what I mean. Like, I went to London for the for the Golden Jubilee celebrations of the Queen and her Diamond Jubilee. I went up for one of the regatta thing on the Thames, just because it's such a big moment in history. Mm. And to be part of that, I think, is really quite exciting. Do you know what I mean?
I think that's a really odd thing, actually. You've got along to something, the people involved in which you don't care for, or, you know, as you say, you're ambivalent towards them.
Yeah.
But you've been there just to... Well, say you were there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not ambivalent. I like the Queen. I think the Queen's great. Like, she's 94. I think when she is no longer here, then it's time for a bit of modernisation of the royal family. It's never going to change while she's still around. You know what I mean? But then, so there's something about her. I quite like her, but there's something about being part of, though. I think I've always had this romantic notion in my mind that in my old age, I'll be able to sit with the grandchildren sitting on a rug in front of me, and I can tell them tales of when I saw the Queen on the royal barge on her Diamond Jubilee, and everyone was cheering, and it was such fun. I mean, I haven't got kids of my own, and that's probably not going to happen now, so I don't know who I'm going to bore with these fucking tales.
Me, when I'm old. Probably.
Do you know what I mean? It's like when the London Olympics was on.
Oh, that's different.
I didn't... I regret not getting tickets to go to the Olympic Village, but I did feel I needed to go up for something. So I went up for the marathon, just to sort of feel like I was part of this huge thing. I ended up getting absolutely shit-faced because they follow a route that runs past the Mall near Buckingham Palace.
Okay.
And they pass it, I don't know, two or three times, but there's a good sort of half an hour between them passing. So there's time to go and have a pint or two, come back, go and have a pint or two, come back. And then when they finished, I just spent the day in the pub getting absolutely hammered. I think that was the last time I got really, really hammered. But, you know, I was there. I can say in my old age, London 2012, I went to the marathon and it was amazing. You know, I can really bore people. So anyway, Harry and Meghan, I don't quite understand why they've done it. I totally respect their wishes to walk away from the royal family, to have their own life. But it's sort of counterintuitive to do this massive TV thing when part of the reason they want to go away is to get away from the publicity and the paparazzi and all that. I don't quite understand it.
I know what you mean, and I understand that, but I slightly disagree with it.
Okay.
I think that they are wanting their privacy, which is being invaded by the press and all the pressures that come with that. They still want to remain public figures and, you know, when they choose to go and do interviews and have public appearances and press and stuff. But that's different than all the invasion of privacy shit that comes with it. And famously, even probably as to why Harry's hypersensitive about looking after Meghan, is because I think he attributes the media frenzy around his mum towards the reason for her early demise. So I can understand it from that point of view. And I think it's reasonable to say I'd like to remain a celebrity or a famous person or a person in the news, but I don't agree with the terms of all the invasion of privacy that come with that. And that's what they're trying to walk away from, I think.
But I don't think you can. I don't think you can have both, can you? I think if you want to, the fact that you are a prince and she's a princess means there's always going to be interest. So if you want to stay in the public eye, there's always going to be interest and there's always going to be invasion of your privacy. So I don't think they're ever going to get away from that. And then by going onto a TV show and doing a big interview, it's just going to, you know, I mean, for days now, there's been experts talking about what might be said, you know, you think that's hardly sort of stepping out of the spotlight a little bit.
I've been listening to a political radio station, LBC, while I've been out of work today, and I swear to you, they have been talking about it relentlessly from the time I started work to the time I finished work. They were still talking about Harry and Meghan. So you are right. It is a strange move to make if you want, you know, people to stop talking about you.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it'd be interesting. I just don't know if I can sit through 2 hours of it. I think I'll probably wait for the edited highlights.
Yes.
And then the post-match analysis. They should do it like a match of the day type thing. They have the 2 hours. You can watch the full match if you want. But then sort of 11:30, have a 20-minute highlights package with Alan Hansen afterwards, drawing little circles around their faces. Not Alan Hansen. You probably want, like, they'd always have, like, they always wheel out, don't they? Always wheel out a body language expert.
Oh.
Which, I mean, is such bullshit.
I know.
I don't believe that. It's like, what do you mean? Oh, you can tell by the way he's holding his little finger up that he's traumatised. What the fuck are you talking about?
Oh, I know. You'll get all these YouTube videos coming out in the next few days, trust me, analysing her every blink, saying about how she doesn't really mean what she's saying here. And, oh, God, it'll be relentless.
I can't bear all of that. Just if you're interested, have a listen, move on.
Apparently, one of the concerning things has been an accusation that someone in the royals, we're not told who, was apparently raising concerns about the colour of her baby's skin, what colour that would be.
Right, OK.
And
knew there might be some racism in the royal family?
I don't think I'm speaking out of turn, but I think since that's come out, I think Harry has been quick to come out and say, it wasn't his grandmother or his grandfather, i.e. the Queen or Prince Philip, which surprised me, to be honest. So now we're left with a sort of guessing game as who's the royal racist.
Yeah, well, it's like Guess Who. That's a little board game they could bring out with little pictures of all the kind of, I don't know, from the senior down to some minor royals, and you have to guess which one's the racist.
Would it have to be called Guess Whom?
Guess which one.
I never know the right way of using who and whom, but whom always sounds like something posh people say.
Yeah, I think it's a much posher thing. And there's probably some sort of really grammatical reason, but yeah, I think posh people will always use it just to sound a bit posher.
No, I like guess which one or guess one.
Because I love that. I love it, like, when posh people say one must do one's duty, just say I have it done. So at least the question. So if you were a royal, would you want to be a royal? Because I don't think I'd ever want to be a royal. Because I mean, the thing about the reason I'm sort of ambivalent is like I don't have absolute. I know people who absolutely hate the monarchy and hate everything about the monarchy and sort of as a result hate the people in it. It's not their fault. They're born into it. So you can't blame them for it. But
I don't hate them. I think that's a very strong word. I'm like you. I very much couldn't give a shit about them.
Yeah,
I wish them all, you know, well, and good luck to them. I do think the Queen is deserved of a lot of respect, and that's great. And she's done a lot for the country. But ultimately, if I'm being a bit cynical, she's basically had the cushiest life anyone could ever want. I mean, she sits around and waves and gets God knows how much people waiting on foot, hand and foot for her, following her around. She's got chefs. She doesn't have to work a nerve other than that one in her wrist for that slight wave she does at public events. It's just, okay, you know, you might have a certain duty to the country and whatnot, but it's come at the cost of a very easy life.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a bit of a simplistic view. I think.
All right, well, I'll add to that then. She's done nothing. She's done nothing to earn that position.
No, that's what I mean. But you're born into it, so it's not her fault. And her whole life has been taken up by duty. You know, the cost of that life, yes, it's cushy. Yes, you kind of have everything on tap that you would want. The cost of it is you don't have your own life. You know, you can't just go and do anything you want to do because your whole life is about a duty. So I kind of feel that, to be fair, she's worked bloody hard. She's 94. She still works every day of her life doing something. You know, she's not able to retire. So, you know, I kind of have sympathy for them in that sense. But it's a strange old thing, a monarchy, isn't it, really? I mean, if I was, the thing I'd be really disappointed if I was born into that and was an heir and became king. You don't really have any power. Like, you know, in the old days, like, you know, Henry VIII, you know, he had full power, didn't he?
Yeah.
You know, the Queen's, it's sort of all ceremonial. Do you know what I mean? You don't have any power to do it. I'd love her just to say, you know, why don't we just all fuck off to Ibiza for the week and shut down, and we'll call it a royal break. Yeah, she can't do that.
Well, I'm not entirely sure you're right, actually. Now, you know, trust me, anyone who's listened to any amount of our podcast will know that you are the more switched on one politically. And I'm getting this information from TikTok, so...
Oh, the fount of all knowledge.
There's a good chance I'm wrong. But correct me if you think I've gone wrong, right? You say the Queen has no power.
Yeah.
However, isn't there some sort of, I don't know the official terminology for it, but some sort of royal scepter which is kept in the House of Commons, which means that they can make rulings under the Queen's jurisdiction and Parliament and government make legal decisions because it's been entrusted to them by the Queen?
Yeah, but she's not making the decisions.
That's like, because she's entrusted it to them.
That's it.
So I've heard, and this is where it could all fall down, that she could, hypothetically, be within her rights to go into the House of Commons, retrieve said scepter, and then be in full control.
Well, I don't know. When you say that, do you mean the House of Lords or the House of Commons?
I think it was the House of Commons. It may be the House of Lords.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think she has any authority to do it. I mean, maybe she has. I don't know enough about that. But I mean, I'd love it if she did. Like, why didn't she do that during the whole Brexit thing? Do you know what I mean? Like, she must have sat back watching this thing. Why didn't she just burst open the doors? Just go in and kick open the doors, grab that thing and go, right, whichever way, I don't really mind. But she was like, right, that's it, we're leaving. Or we're staying, just shut the fuck up and move on.
Can she, for want of the, I don't know what the proper word is, can she defrock Boris Johnson? Could the Queen boot the door in and say, right, you're out, son? Because they have to ask her permission to form a government. So could she say, right, you're out?
No, it doesn't work. She asks them.
No, that's not true.
Yes. She asks them to form the government. They've been democratically elected.
No. There's always this thing where they win the vote, so they've got the vote. Then you see them driving to Buckingham Palace to ask the Queen for permission to run the government. And then Lizzie says yes.
No, she asks them, as the leader of the party that has won the election, to form a government, to form her government.
Are you sure?
I'm pretty certain that's what happens.
Hmm.
I'm going to look it up now.
Yeah, this would be a great side game to guess one.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that she does the asking.
I don't think that... Well, if that is true, then it must be the most misreported things ever then, because I always hear them reporting that Theresa May is driving to Downing Street, or driving to Buckingham Palace, or David Cameron's driving to Buckingham Palace, or Boris Johnson's driving to Buckingham Palace to ask the Queen's permission.
Right, well, let me read you the details of what happens, right? So once there's been an election, and if the incumbent Prime Minister wins, they just carry on as normal, yeah, right? But if there's a change of party running the country, the incumbent Prime Minister informs Buckingham Palace that they will be resigning. There's then a well-rehearsed sequence of events. So the outgoing Prime Minister travels to see the Queen, formally tenders their resignation, right? They then have a short audience with the Queen. I always think that must be like an audience with Ken Dodd or something. They do 10 minutes of stand-up. After the outgoing Prime Minister's left, the incoming Prime Minister arrives and he's formally asked by the Queen to form a government. This audience is known as kissing hands.
Oh,
and then after the appointment, the new Prime Minister heads straight to Downing Street.
I don't like that.
You don't like the fact that she does the asking?
I don't like the... I am hoping it's the metaphorical kissing of hands that happens.
I bet they do. Perhaps these days with the whole COVID thing, that wouldn't be allowed. But I'm sure there's probably a bit of ring kissing going on.
especially with Boris fucking Johnson.
Oh, he'd go in with tongues, though, wouldn't he? He'd be like full in.
Can you imagine?
I've waited for this moment all my life.
God, Trevor, I need to sleep tonight. Can you just imagine the bulge in his pants when the Queen of England asked him to be the Prime Minister?
Oh, I mean, he'd finish it off as well. Like, he'd certainly present her with a pearl necklace.
Oh, Trev! Oh, that's got to be treasonous.
Oh, that goes a fucking knighthood, didn't it? There's no way. Like, if in a few years' time I've done some good charity work and I'm put forward for some award, and they've probably got, like, lots of people in the background who do checks on anyone who's put forward for an award, and they'll dig this podcast out.
Yeah.
And they'll have to play it to her. Because she'll say, and what about Trevor Smith? He seems a good chap. He's done a lot of work for charity and the arts. You haven't listened to this.
Sorry, is this podcast the arts?
The arts, yeah. Have a listen to this, Liz. Oh, no, I don't think I could be awarding him anything. Just while we're talking about topical stuff, Ben.
Oh, yeah?
Just get something off my chest.
Go on.
So we had the budget in the last week.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't understand it all. Economics is way over my head. All I know is it's a lot of people talking bollocks. Mm-hmm. But they're only giving nurses a little bit of money. And I was so furious about that.
A 1% pay rise?
1%, £3.50 a week, essentially, that works out.
Trev, come on, we clap for them. What else do they need?
Yeah, that's all right then, we clap for them, didn't we? Fucking hell. Like, the whole way through all this, we've asked them to put their lives on the line. We've been making heroes of them, and quite rightly. And when it comes to rewarding them, they've gone, well, I mean, they're only worth an extra £3.50 a week. It's like fucking outrageous.
And I would just care to remind you that Boris Johnson and a plethora of other Tories have stood in front of lecterns emblazoned with the words, protect the NHS.
Yeah.
1%.
Yeah.
So disgusting.
So as Rishi Sunak's taken the piss out of the nurses, I thought we could take the piss out of him.
Oh, fun.
Right. So I don't know how old this thing is, but this clip's emerged this week of him being interviewed by a couple of school kids.
Oh, I think I know what this is.
Have you seen this?
I heard about it. I haven't actually heard it.
So it was like for some school podcast, I'd imagine. And I always hate it when they put politicians into these situations. We've talked about this before, like these really well-managed situations, but they're always so awkward and horrible. So he's sitting in a classroom. He's got two school kids in front of him. They ask him this question.
Do you prefer Coke or Pepsi?
Now, to start with, I'm not having to go at the kids, by the way. I'm not having to go at the kids, but how posh do they sound? I mean, they've not sent him to like a normal school, have they?
So, do you prefer Coke or Pepsi?
Yeah. I mean, you know, my parents obviously are, you know, they voted for you. I mean, they've not sent him to my local comprehensive. Do you know?
No.
I mean? So anyway, they've asked him whether he prefers Coke or Pepsi. Let's have a listen to his response.
I'm a massive
knobhead.
Things that not that many people know about me. So I collect Coca-Cola things.
He collects Coca-Cola things. I mean, for fuck's sake.
What does that even mean? I mean, Coca-Cola things.
This is like... Do you remember when Boris was asked, was it before the last general election, you know, how do you relax?
Oh,
and he bumbled about and said, right, I make model buses out of, sort of wine bottles, and I turn them on their side. Has anyone seen any of these fucking models?
Jesus, but I swear, Trev, you are not exaggerating. If you need to have a look at the man running our country, our test and trace. By the way, 1% for the nurses, £37 billion pounds on a failed test and trace. Well done, Boris.
I made that test and trace system out of an old calculator, an old Casio solar-powered calculator.
Seriously, go onto YouTube, look at Boris Johnson explaining his hobby of making model buses. That is the dithering buffoon that we have overseeing our COVID crisis.
And lying buffoon. He's never made a fucking model bus in his life.
Amazed any of us are still alive.
So Rishi Sunak, he collects Coke things. So I mean, how many Coke things can you collect? I mean, I remember as a kid they used to do yo-yos that had like different drinks names on them. Maybe he's got a Coca-Cola yo-yo.
Yeah.
Perhaps he collects different cans, but he's into his Coke. We know that.
I'm a Coke addict.
He's a Coke addict.
Rishi Sunak, the Coke addict.
He does clarify.
A total Coke addict. Coca-Cola addict. Yeah,
that's
just
the record. I was going
to say, just the record. Just being totally clear.
Yeah, just to be totally clear, I'm not into any other sort of Coke. It's just the stuff you drink. Right. So. You know, you think, well, how boring can this man be? It's a bit like, do you remember Jeremy Corbyn? Like, his hobby was taking photographs of manhole covers. And you can believe that he genuinely does that as well.
Yes, 100%.
Like, Boris doesn't make models of buses, but Jeremy Corbyn definitely collects pictures of manhole covers. You can imagine going around his house and him going, would you like to see my collection of photographs of manhole covers? And do you know what, Jezza? I don't think I do. I've got some very interesting ones. This one I took in Paris. It's from 1943. It survived the Luftwaffe. Fuck off, Jezza.
And Theresa May, when asked the wildest thing she'd or the
naughtiest thing she'd ever done,
running through a wheat field.
Yeah.
And I mean, by the way, I should say, whatever floats your boat, good luck to you. If you like collecting stamps, if you like looking at manholes, fine.
Yeah.
Good on you. But do you have to be so chronically boring to be a politician in this country?
Yes, you do. I mean, you got the two lots, haven't you? You got like the... I mean, there's not really two equal halves. You've got a lot of posh, toffee-nosed politicians, all went to fucking Eton, who, you know, like the Bullingdon Club lot and all that, you know, their hobby was going around basically ransacking restaurants and just throwing money at them at the end of the night, going, well, that'll pay for the damage. You know, he's sort of, you know, fucking pigs' heads. He sort of tosses. Or you get the other end, where they're just like, well, I collect manhole cover photographs, or I run through a field of wheat for fun.
Yeah, but I reckon even the train spotters laugh at the manhole cover spotters.
Do you think? I reckon there's a crossover. I reckon if you had a Venn diagram, there'd be quite a lot that cross over. Because there's a, you know, once you get into that collection mentality, I think that there's definitely a crossover there. If you collect train numbers, manhole cover pictures aren't going to be too far behind. So anyway, let's move on. Rishi Sunak.
Oh, yes.
So let's not discount him entirely, because maybe there is something a little bit more interesting about Coke that we can learn from Rishi Sunak, because he is such a massive fan of the drink.
Okay.
And actually, my favourite drink is not even Coke. It's called Mexican Coke. Because you get it, it's this special Coke, which is the only place in the world where Coke is made with cane sugar rather than high fructose corn syrup. For the people that are really interested in this kind of thing.
Yeah. How many people? I mean, Jesus Christ.
Oh, so what? Oh, did you hear Rishi Sunak today? Oh, yeah, I heard about him, yeah. Oh, he's into Coke, apparently. Yeah. Oh, what, the sugarcane stuff or the high fructose stuff? Which is it?
He likes the sugarcane stuff. That's what he really likes, the Mexican, it's the good shit. That's what he really, he loves the good shit. I mean, honestly, it's such nonsense. I mean, I can actually believe that he really is interested. He talks about having seven fillings because the amount of Coke that he's had in his life. And he's, there's one bit where he says, I'm only allowed one a week now because he doesn't have any of the diet stuff. He won't touch Pepsis, but he has one Coke a week. Like, who's brought that rule in? Like,
his mum?
Or he's so boring that he's actually put that rule in for himself. You know, he's gone, I'll only give myself one a week, but it will be the sugar cane option.
The good shit.
The good shit. Yeah, that's what I'll have once a week. I mean, honestly.
I imagine he probably likes it in a glass bottle as well.
Oh, well, that's, I mean, in fairness, that's the best way to have it. But yeah, absolutely. And he probably collects the bottles. He's probably got shelves and shelves of bottles. Like, I, when I was at school, there was a kid, like one of my best mates at school, but he used to collect different milk bottles. Because back in the day when there were glass milk bottles, you'd often get different ones with different pictures on the painted on the glass. So it was quite a thing to collect, I suppose.
I am so glad I was brought up with consoles and video games. Fucking milk bottles. Jesus wept.
Well, no, I mean, it was a fair thing to be collecting. And I suppose if you're into, like, Coke bottles, there might be different ones. Like, the Mexican Coke that he gets, like, what's that? Is that in a different sort of bottle? Is that something you can then add to your collection? I don't know how many other things he can be collecting when he says he collects Coke stuff.
Yeah, I'm guessing it's just, I don't know, memorabilia or promotional shit.
But what have you ever collected anything?
I went through a phase as a kid of trying to complete one of those football sticker albums.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Lost interest in that pretty quick.
My mum bought me the Panini football sticker album for a Christmas present, Christmas 1986. But she bought me the 1986 sticker book, which is obviously for the season 86 to 87. But there was, I really struggled to get the stickers because everyone had moved on to the 87 book.
Oh.
And I never completed. I've still got it. Still got it.
Of course you've still got it because you never throw anything away.
But I quite enjoy looking through it every now and again and seeing like the shit haircuts that footballers had in the 80s. I was always gutted I never completed my one Panini album I went for.
I wonder on average how much money you have to spend to, you know, complete, just simply by luck alone, how much money, I bet it's hundreds.
There was a thing, because I don't know if it was for the last World Cup or, yeah, it must have been the last World Cup, I think. My godson had the Panini sticker album for the World Cup. And I think the general rule was, if you were going to buy enough stickers to complete it, I mean, there's lots of great things now where you go online and you do swaps with people. So I think he was able to complete the sticker book without having to spend the full amount. But I think it's somewhere in the region like 400 quid or something if you were to buy all the stickers and get a complete set. So, yeah, it's a lot of money.
Damn.
Again, like, I suppose I did grow up in a different time. So I collected for quite a while. I've still got my little book of them, my little album. I collected coins for quite a while.
It was probably for Euro 96. I think they did a series of silver coins.
Yeah,
for
they
that.
Did. Yeah, yeah. I got a few of them, I think.
Was that Euro 96?
Yeah, it must have been Euro 96. That was one in England, wasn't it? So they would have done a lot of those things. And they're often done by like petrol stations, weren't they? Like Esso, you'd have to
get
up. Like, you always say to my dad, oh, can we go to Esso? Because I've got to get Gary Lineker. You get the, because back in the day, I don't know if they do that anymore, but petrol stations always gave away shit. Like Esso were great. I remember having the Esso Tiger t-shirt, or is it a lion? the SO Lion, or is it Tiger? But we had
the t-shirt.
Wine glasses. They used to give away wine glasses. Every time you filled up, you got some tokens, and then you could put them against all these things. I think most of my mum and dad's wine glass collection came from Esso.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, it's like, they don't do that anymore, do they? I don't think.
Don't think so.
Which is weird. It was a weird thing, but it was like the done thing. But now I used to collect coins, so I've got sort of, you know, old sort of pennies and threepenny bits and all these old foreign notes, and I've probably got some stuff that might be worth a bit, you know. I do have a Roman coin.
Weren't we talking about Rishi Sunak? Sorry, just had an out-of-body experience for a second there. You've gone from Rishi Sunak to Roman coins.
Yeah, well, we were just talking about collecting stuff. You know. So I've got a Roman coin.
Good for you.
My brother used to collect stamps. I used to find that boring. But
it's extremely boring.
He lost interest in that after a while. But again, like, I suppose the excitement is that you might come across like a rare... Like, that was my thing when I was collecting coins. Think, I wonder if I'd ever come across a really rare note or coin. And the thing is, I'll never know, because I'd have to take it to some expert and they'd probably just look at my collection and go, well, actually, it's all pretty worthless. But I've still got, you know, so one of those things that when I move on from this world, I'll leave that to someone and they might come across something that will change their lives because it's worth a lot.
I think that will be the final fuck you that you ever leave to anybody, is having to sift through all the shit in your house and work out what's worth anything and what's not.
Well, it's weird. I was talking to you about this on the phone the other night, wasn't I? Because I'm going through a process at the moment where I'm going to be making my will.
Already made mine. That's a fun afternoon, let me tell you.
Yeah, and it's a weird thought to go through because you think, well, who am I going to leave what to? You're right. Just clearing your throat.
No, sorry. You were saying you were thinking about...
Yeah, just, you know, who I might leave some stuff to. And I was thinking probably, you know, my godchildren. I'll leave them a lot of stuff. I think I might leave you my coin collection.
No!
And my Panini uncompleted 1986 football sticker album.
Only if by your coin collection is some sort of euphemism for your bank account, then fine.
But no, it's a weird thought process, you know. Because I remember years ago when I was making radio adverts, having to make some adverts for will companies, and this woman saying to me, "Oh, it's never too you're never too young to make a will."
And in your head, you're going to say it's never too late. Oh, it definitely can be.
In your head, you're thinking, "Yeah, but I mean, at that time, I was probably in my 20s. It's like I'm not making a will yet." But you know, now I'm 43, and I won't go into all the details, but I'm going to be making one. And, you know, it's the first time I've ever had to really think about it. And then you were saying to me, because you've made yours, not only do you have to say who you want to leave stuff to, you can also say who you definitely don't want to have stuff. I didn't know that.
This was something which was a fantastic revelation to me. Yeah, it's true. You can put in a clause in your will which says that under no circumstances should your estate or any of your possessions or money go to a certain list of people. As with most wills, if you think of anything else in the next sort of 2 weeks, you're able to update it for free.
Yeah.
And I love this idea because there have been, sadly, it's I'm using this lightheartedly now, but sadly, there have been quite a few people in my life who've crossed me. And they are on the fuck you list.
Wow, that's amazing.
And I had the wonderful phone call about a week after making my will, where I turned to Mrs. Ben and I said, "We forgot her." And she went, "Oh shit, we did." So I said, right, I phoned up my guy and I said, "I've got someone else to add to the fuck you list."
I mean, I'm not sure that you've been making a will or whether you've just been taking out contracts. I forgot about her, so I phoned my guy and it's all been sorted now. She's not going to trouble us anymore.
Well, either way, I don't care. If I've booked an accidental hit, I'd be, well, less concerned.
It's a weird. I was thinking though, like in films and TV shows, they always sort of, but I think more American than British, but they always have like the reading of the will thing where everyone gathers in a room. And I mean, I don't think in my family, when people have passed on, there's ever been that sort of thing, or I've certainly never been involved in it, and I don't think anyone has. I just don't think they happen. But I quite like that idea that I sort of want one of those, and I'd really want to put some stuff in there to make people feel uncomfortable. I might put little clauses in where people have to dress up in a certain way, or sort of, like, you've got to come dressed as a Klingon or something. You know what I mean? And I'd quite like to have one of those like videos that they put on where I'm sitting there going, if you're watching this, I'm dead now. and thank you for coming to this special reading of my will. By the way, if you're wearing the Klingon outfit, it's because I always thought you were a fucking wanker. You know, it'd be quite a final great way of leaving the world, wouldn't it?
I thought of... I don't know what this says about my character, but A, I have a fuck you list on my will, and B, I've even thought through ways to torture people post-death. I thought if it's someone I really don't like, I might leave them something in my will, and it'll be a series of treasure maps, and they'll think they're going to get something fucking amazing by completing this, and the final clue with the big payout will be on the other side of the world in Australia. They'll book flights, they'll spend money, they'll go there, they'll find it, they'll dig it up, and it'll be a picture of me giving them the fucking finger.
That'd be amazing. I like the idea of doing it with a bit of a modern sort of slant on it. We do some geocaching and you send them on this wild goose chase to all these coordinates, so they find a little, like a little metal pot, and in it a scroll with just another coordinate on, and you could keep this going for like years. You could plant thousands of these things up and down the country, and then when they finally get to the final one, as you say, just a picture of me with my finger up. I mean, what an amazing way to do it. But I mean, what, imagine if you're like Rishi Sunak's family. Like, you know, Rishi Sunak is worth about 200 million quid.
What?
Like, he's I think he's richer than the Queen. Like,
how old is Rishi Sunak? Or Richie Sunak, as I'm going to be calling him from now on.
How old is he?
Yeah. How's he got that?
I think it's all property, and he's worth a lot of money, right? And you imagine if you're like his mate.
He's 40.
He's 40, so he's younger than me. He's worth 200 million quid, apparently. I don't know how true those sorts of things are, because he gets his... He's on a big salary. He gets his MP salary plus the salary for being Chancellor, which is in total, that works out about 160 grand a year. And he's got all this property, I think. His wife's very rich as well. So, I mean, there's so much money there, right, with Rishi Sunak. Imagine being his mate, and in the future, Rishi Sunak passes on, and you think, oh, there's so much money there, and he's left something to me in the will. You get his fucking Coca-Cola collection. There we are, that's it for another Trev and Ben podcast, another meandering ramble.
Oh, I don't know, I enjoyed it this week.
Before we go, a couple of recommendations. I tell you what I've watched this week, which is amazing. It's on Netflix. It's one of those true crime documentaries, and it's called Murder Among the Mormons.
Sounds intriguing.
Well, it is. It's only three episodes. It's an amazing story of intrigue and deceit, and it's just your jaw just drops once you find out the truth. It's incredible. So I really heartily recommend that. I know you're a big fan of true crime stuff, and they are compelling viewing, aren't they?
They are brilliant. It is a great genre of stuff to watch. Can I ask, though, I know almost nothing. No, in fact, I will say I know nothing about the Mormons or the Mormon Church.
Right.
Do you need a base level understanding to appreciate the documentary? Or
No. It's all kind of explained to you. I mean, the basic idea of the Mormons is it's a form of the Christian faith. But this man, Joseph Smith, I think his name was, he supposedly found in the forest a gold book that he then went home and copied, and this is the Book of Mormon. And then Of course, the book was then handed back to the Angels or whatever it is, so there's no proof of this book. But anyway, it's a fascinating...
Just handed it back to the Angels, and anyone witnessed that? Or
No, witnesses to it at all. It could be nonsense.
It's just as bullshit as every other religion, so don't worry about it.
But anyway, that's all explained. You don't need that. It's just it's a great, great documentary, so that's worth a watch. And the other thing I watched was a film called Unsane, which has got Claire Foy in it, who played the Queen in the first two series of The Crown. The Crown.
The Crown.
The Crown. She was the Queen in The Crown. And I've got a little bit of a thing about her, so anything I ever see her in, I like. But it's a great film. She finds herself committed to a psychiatric ward, and she thinks she's being stalked. That's all I'll say. I was talking to a friend about this the other day, and he said, you know when people get a bit too arty in their critique of a film, and I find myself doing it sometimes, so I'm not having a go, but he went, I just found the direction a little bit muddled. And I was like, yeah, oh, fuck off. It's a good film, it's a good story, watch it. So that's Unsane. It was on Film 4 a couple of weeks ago, so hopefully it's on catch up somewhere.
And of course, I think I would recommend, for anyone who gives a shit, I'm not sure I will, the Harry and Meghan interview, and let me know the highlights.
Oh, the other thing I've been watching, do you remember a couple of weeks ago I talked about watching a programme about Kim Jong-un?
Yeah.
That's been on National Geographic. That's been interesting. Fascinating stories about him.
Okay.
So that's worth a watch as well. So there we are. That's it for this week. Thank you very much for listening and downloading. Don't forget to rate, review, subscribe, bloody, 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 blah.
We don't like the begging bit, do we?
We don't like the begging bit. And if you want to get in touch with us, do. If you want to help out on that programme we talked about earlier, if you know what that is, let us know. We're at Trev and Ben on Twitter. And we'll catch you again next week. Till then, stay safe, stay well, take it easy.
Bye.